Hello, and welcome to 18 Groups podcast on fighting financial crime and improving AML and KYC processes, brought to you from our RegTech Summit in London on the 4th of October 2018. The podcast covers a panel discussion focusing on the role of RegTech in improving AML processes, how to bridge the requirements of KYC and GDPR, and how firms are using digital identities to speed up onboarding and meet KYC compliance. Listen to the podcast to find out more from the expert panel.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for this afternoon session on fighting financial crime, improving AML and KYC, obviously with the use of RegTech around. My name is Denise Rudich. I am a strategic advisor in financial crime prevention. I work for a company called FireDrake Limited, which is kind of type of a challenger consultancy made up of ex-bankers who effectively help banks become more efficient in their workflow by orchestrating through what they call fintech orchestration. And I'm hoping some of you know what that means here. If not, please ask me after the session. I am also a member of the Global Coalition to Fight Financial Crime with Thomson Reuters, World Economic Forum, RUSI, and various other partners, and former head of policy for RBS. But I've decided to look at the world of fintech and regtech because it's a very exciting space. So we have we're hoping to have this as a bit of a discussion as opposed to an actual kind of people doing presentations. I am joined for this discussion by Anu Ratan, who is a senior global AML and policy advisory manager for top tier banks, Tark Patience, who is the group chief compliance officer from the Gibraltar Stock Exchange. And if you guys can please maybe introduce yourselves a little bit more properly, that would be fantastic. So, Annie, please take it away.
Thank you, Denise. Good afternoon, everyone. A lot of you might be wondering, what am I doing here? I'm from Policy and Advisory, and this is a fintech and regtech discussion. I'm here to discuss financial crime compliance requirements, and especially now there is a lot of collaboration requirement between the regtech companies and the compliance teams. So I'm a senior policy and advisory manager. I work in AML. I work extensively with global banks, HSBC, RBS, Deutsche, Barclays, UBS. And I draft group policy, and I do advisory for all lines of business in all regions. I have, interestingly, I'm a computer science and engineering graduate, so I work a couple of years in technology. I also work within the business, so I've done risk assessments, I've worked as a business analyst, so I kind of understand the whole spectrum of technology, working with the business, and drafting policy. So as much as I understand bits and bytes, I also understand the directives and the regulations. And that's a reason for my interest in fintech and regtech, and understanding when we draft policies, what impact it has within the technology areas and how they can be implemented and interpreted. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'm Tark Patience. That's very loud. The Group Chief Compliance Officer at the Gibraltar Stock Exchange Group. So prior to joining there, I spent 7 years running a regulatory consultancy called Tesseract that I founded in 2011. So I worked across the raft of post-G20 regulatory reforms across different sectors of the market and was involved a lot in advocacy and lobbying across those regulations as well as implementing them. The Gibraltar Stock Exchange Group is built of three pillars, the first being the stock exchange itself, which is currently focused heavily on debt securities and open and closed-ended funds. We have a fund administration and fiduciary services business called Juno, and we've also launched the Gibraltar Blockchain Exchange, which is an ICO platform and digital asset exchange. So we work very closely with technology and are very closely involved in the emerging DLT industry, and we're looking to develop into tokenized securities, so trading traditional regulated financial instruments on the blockchain and leveraging all the potential efficiencies there. And across that business, we obviously have KYC, AML, KYB requirements to differing standards, obviously dependent on which part of the business it is. So we're currently undertaking a rationalization process and making things more efficient and working very closely with RegTech providers to look at how we can have more efficient and effective processes leveraging that. So this is a topic that's very close to my heart and consumes a lot of my time.
I'm Aoife Harney, and I'm here from Finergo, which offers a client lifecycle management solution. Nice pullback, is that better? So I'll keep it brief. I have a background in law, worked in corporate trust in BNY Mellon, and then moved into compliance in the funds industry, before starting as a regulatory consultant with a focus on global data privacy, and most recently, my newest baby, GDPR. So I think I'm one of the few people on the face of the earth who feels rather passionate about data protection. So, and I suppose that's I'm just really looking forward to getting stuck into this panel today with Anu and Tarek and Denise.
All right, thank you very much for introducing yourself. So this is why we have been asked to speak with you guys here today. So what we're basically going to try to do is kind of go through a whistle-stop tour of why is RegTech on the rise, and you know, what kind of RegTech is out there and how can it be implemented and the reasons for this. So we're going to go through a series of questions. The first one being, what are some of the inherent inefficiencies in traditional AML processes that are being addressed by emerging models of fintech and RegTech? Well, we'll call it RegTech for this forum purposes. So, Tarek, if you can please go ahead.
Yeah, sure. So I guess one of the key things when you're onboarding a client, you need to identify, is this person sanctioned? Are they a politically exposed person? Are they a crook? And so there are a lot of dynamic managed updated lists. I think Dow Jones is over 1,100 different lists of such individuals that everyone is screened against. And there are a lot of firms that are developing various automated solutions to rapidly check people against that. But one of the major inefficiencies that I haven't really seen addressed that I think is necessary is using a delta for those lists. If you have ongoing monitoring, you've already onboarded a client, you need to check whether they have suddenly become subject to sanctions, they are suddenly a crook, they've suddenly married a judge. You need to recheck that person against 1,100 lists. Whereas it would make an awful lot more sense if when those lists change, the way in which they're changed is presented, and that were to be checked against your records. In terms of identifying individuals, it's a very manual process traditionally. There's a lot of manual verification of identity documents. There have long been reference tools to be used to check whether there are security measures in place, whether there are security signifiers in place on identity documents, for example. There are some resources for checking proof of address, whether a utility bill is legitimate or has been made up from something they found on the internet, which is a very common attempt. There is a lot of RegTech that's been emerging, and there are a couple of firms that work with law enforcement where you have biometric mapping of selfies to identity documents. So that's really speeding up the onboarding process. But I'd say one of the common inefficiencies is just the unlevel playing field in the way in which the proceeds of crime directives have been adopted across different jurisdictions, which is an ongoing issue, but I'm sure will be resolved over time.
And can you give us the perspective, having worked at many of these top-tier financial institutions, what do you think are some of the key inefficiencies and some of the key challenges that can actually be addressed and targeted by fintechs and regtechs?
Sure. I might sound late already or in the previous sessions, but just want to highlight, yes, the process is very manual, and we are limited by the speed of the human hand and the human mind. And also, the speed at which data is increasing, as we all know, I mean, your all fintech specialists, is just getting out of control. Even the number of regulations and interpreting them as compliance officers is getting out of control. So one is the process is very manual. It's difficult to manage the data that's there. The data quality is not so good. But other than that, with the new fintech firms and startups that are coming in, we just saw a demo. Some time back, I advised AI startup, which was powered by IBM Watson. Not to say that I'm trying to advertise Watson, but Denise, I'm sorry, I'm throwing this question at you. How many pages can you read in a second?
Not one. Okay. Not one per second, that's for sure.
So if we compare that with Watson can read 800 million pages per second. And again, I want to stress that I'm not here to advertise Watson. I don't work for IBM. But that's the difference in scale, 800 million versus maybe one. And not only can Watson and AI engines read at that processing speed, it can also, some of these I've seen, for example, Watson I've seen, is actually read a page at that rate and predict the emotional quotient of what the person is saying. So before an attack, it can actually go through all these Twitter articles and Facebook posts and say, okay, is there, what is the intent behind what the person is saying? And I've actually seen, I've actually worked on Watson, I've actually seen that happening. It's not something I'm just saying it here for the purpose of saying. So I've actually seen that predictive kind of analytics where it can actually go through these pages at 800 million times per second and understand the negativity quotient of an article. And that's the kind of difference that we see in traditional AML processes versus the technology that's there. AI has always been there, even many, many years back, but it's the way we are now able to leverage the kind of computing capabilities we have now is what is the difference. The other thing I've seen in financial service firms are that the systems are not connected to each other within the group, like within different lines of business or within geographies. I'll give an example. A couple of years back, I had to review systems within an international bank. It was a group wide review I had to do, and I was given a list of 353 systems. And I had to review them for their KYC procedures because we were trying to build a master data management system. And when I finished my review after 6 months, there were 1,008 systems that were there in total. So 700 more systems that I discovered after talking to countries, because there were these standalone systems that had been built over the years, having their own proprietary software, that were holding this client data that the group was not aware of, and the systems were not talking to each other. So that's the kind of complexity that's there, that's the kind of challenge that's there, and that's the kind of risk that is there with traditional AML processes. It's not scalable, and it just cannot keep up with the demands of business.
And I think in addition to that, obviously, know your customer is really focused on the individual, but know your business is a very key thing to a lot of us in terms of not just clients but also counterparties. And ownership structures can be incredibly complex. Obviously, currently regulation is focused on 25% ownership. There's a best practice approach for a lot of firms to be at 10% of ultimate beneficial ownership. And there are firms, again, that offer services that will ostensibly provide a smart instant mapping of UBOs, even for complex organizations. And they're very, very effective for very well-regulated jurisdictions where a lot of information is available. But particularly in the funds industry, for example, and a lot of companies, there will be UBOs that are based in tax-beneficial jurisdictions such as Caymans or BVI. They'll be entirely legitimate, but the information is not easily accessible. And so there's still very manual processes undertaken because you need to retrieve and interpret information from those registers. And to pay a third party to do those checks will cost you per entity thousands. So that's a very costly inefficiency.
And so you work for Finergo, one of the regtechs that is actually used by quite a few banks to help them manage their workflow processes. So what kind of, how do you think you tackle some of those inefficiencies with your product?
So there's a number of ways. I think primarily, and this meets Anu's point as well, of the need for that centralized database or centralized data repository. So if we flip it as well, this isn't just about cutting down the number of hours for the employees or the KYC experts in the bank, but it's also to make the entire client journey easier for that client so that they'll want to do business with you and you can continue making money that way. At the end of the day, that's what this is also about. So to make sure that they're not submitting and then resubmitting all those data and docs, at least you know that you have it in the one place and can easily derive the required information from that. And I suppose further to that, you can make use of all your APIs for whatever data retrieval you also need. And event-triggered reviews also make sure that there's no accidental oversight of any required checks that have to take place. And just to have that level of automation, I think, will cut down on the amount of man hours that are required and just make it overall an easier experience for everyone.
Excellent. Thank you very much. So Annie, having worked again in financial institutions, and actually I'm going to throw this to you as well, Targ. So we're seeing some kind of different emerging models of KYC, but also around transaction monitoring and record keeping in this space, which is actually transforming how you apply the regulations and how the regulations need to be possibly reinterpreted in some cases. Can you talk about some of these different kinds of models that you have seen? Maybe if you can talk about two around transaction monitoring or two around KYC.
Sure.
Please.
I think if we look at the emerging models, we have to look at what is internally happening within financial services firms and what are the external factors out there. Internally, if we look at, we can look at CDD, we look at transaction monitoring. Within CDD, and as I was saying earlier, traditionally, historically, the data has been segregated between lines of business and geographies not really talking to each other. But I've seen now FIs are really looking at least as a line of business, they're looking at whole enterprise and seeing how they can consolidate their data. That's one thing. So there are enhancements now. There are products out there that are coming up with new capabilities with customer lifecycle management. Second thing I'm seeing is so the other thing that the challenge was that the different regulatory departments were working silos. So for example, financial crime was one department and security and fraud risk was another department. But they were looking at the same data, and that's another initiatives, that's another kind of initiative where these different departments are looking, they're saying, okay, how do we leverage the same technology? How do we use the same data? Because the data that we have is the same customer data that's owned by the bank, and how do we share our intelligence? So an example again I can give is where when one of the banks that I was working at, the fraud department was using one of the SAS FM, which is the fraud monitoring, and then we looked at it and see, okay, they've already been using it for a couple of years and they already hold that data. How do we also use the same database or same platform? Sorry, I'm not using the right technical words now because I'm policy advisory now, but how do we use the same infrastructure and share the same intelligence? So there's more collaboration between different compliance departments to leverage the same data. So that's happening in terms of data, and obviously there are initiatives around improving data quality as well. In terms of transaction monitoring, one example I want to give is some countries have currency transaction reporting requirements. For example, in the US, if you have a transaction more than $10,000, you need to report it. So criminals will maybe, with an intent to avoid those currency transaction reporting requirements, initiate transactions just below the threshold, and analysts may not be able to detect those kind of transactions. But with this kind of new technologies, they are able to detect these kind of transactions as well, which are just below the threshold. So.
So then, I think quite relevant is actually the process that we're currently undertaking and what we're implementing at the Gibraltar Stock Exchange Group. In terms of due diligence, as I said, we've got multiple businesses. They're all subject to the same requirement to do due diligence on clients or counterparties, but obviously to different levels of enhancement. And what we want is to have a central identity for any individual that's interacting with part of our group, because they may be a counterparty for the stock exchange, they might be trading crypto assets on the digital asset exchange, and they might be a director of a number of funds. It stands to reason that it's a poor customer journey for them to repeatedly be onboarded, and it also stands to reason that we want a view of all of their activity comprehensively across our group of businesses, obviously within the limits of data sharing. And so we're working with a very interesting RegTech company who have a pretty comprehensive solution to a lot of regulatory challenges. That gives us a central client identity store, where clients can be onboarded. From that, we can automate and manage a lot of the due diligence processes that we're defining and relying on a lot of external vendors to support us in that, and is linked up to trade monitoring, both a deep learning. So obviously there have been some really good discussions earlier about AI, and that's very validly being deployed for trade monitoring. There are obviously some quite standard signifiers of market manipulation, but what you really want is self-learning algorithms that can identify patterns and create alerts. In the crypto space, you have a lot of vendors that are offering things like, many people will be familiar with Chainalysis, which does real-time forensic analysis of the blockchain. And the key thing with a central client identity and linked in with smart transaction monitoring is that you can have real-time triggers to affect controls or oversight or monitoring on specific clients, which is really beneficial from a financial crime monitoring perspective.
Thank you very much. Can we talk about digital identities and maybe GDPR? I think maybe you can take that one.
Sure.
You know, how can some of the regtechs act as a bridge to GDPR, and if we can bring anything around digital identities into that, that would be wonderful. If not, that's fine as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, rather than going through a lecture or going through every aspect of GDPR, it's still slightly open to interpretation as we see case law coming down the line. Certain aspects of it will become more clear, like establishment and various other definitions. But we could look at how RegTech can help its users meet at least the principles that are outlined under GDPR. So for transparency, they can use RegTech to, I suppose, monitor their information notices, monitor the legal basis and track any legal basis for processing, as many as there may be in relation to that client or counterparty. Make sure that the data that they've collected is meeting that data minimization principle, that they're only collecting what is required. And by having RegTech there listing exactly which data points are required, there's no need to go out and collect something completely unnecessary. Storage limitation is also met because you can assign a record retention date for, and upon expiry of that record retention period, then you can have, all the data held hard erased to meet that requirement. Or you can track your data access requests. You can track any data portability requests. Extract any information that you need and have it readily available in several different formats that you can then hand to the client or counterparty. Full auditability for any accountability principle, so that you can know that on this date, this was accessed for this reason. It's essentially a digital footprint. And if a data authority came along and asked to see that, you have everything right there in front of you to, I suppose, help your data management better, to help your data management meet full compliance. And where that ends is, I mean, we can't help with the DPOs or DPIAs that might have to run in the background. There's going to be internal governance that has to come from the top. That tone from the top is what will really set it. But in terms of the more, record-related aspects of GDPR, I think RegTech is really going to be, a saving grace for a lot of companies.
Absolutely. I think in terms of the concept of digital identity is really taking hold. People are recognizing that in order to not have these barriers to their journey in terms of entering into investment products or business relationships, the key thing that the surprising thing I found with a lot of firms, and it goes back to the earlier point of variable interpretations of proceeds of crime rules, is that there are a number of firms who intend to just provide a rating. So they will internally gather the data, they will undertake KYC, and they will provide you with their own rating, which will allow you to confirm this person is okay, which really doesn't meet regulated financial institutions' regulatory obligations to carry out their own due diligence. And I think the key thing with digital identities is really the need for collaboration. So if there are common standards, obviously, every firm aspires to be the leader and have a monopoly on creating the digital identities. But the reality is that there will need to be a number of providers, and so common standards is quite a necessity.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for you both. Annie, going back to the traditional financial institution, what are some of the key challenges to actually onboard and bring on a RegTech provider into a live environment?
I would divide this into two parts. One is the technologies for regulatory compliance versus the technologies for providing financial services. I think for established financial services firms to adopt new technologies which provide new kind of financial services, there's the worry about is it regulated in that market, and what regulations do we have to comply with in order to adopt this new technology? For a new technology, to adopt new technologies or provide business to new, let's say, startups, which provide products for regulatory compliance, there are a couple of factors here. One is there are legacy systems out there. So how do these new products fit in with the legacy systems within the bank? Second is the cost is a big factor here. What is the return of investment going to be? And if there is a product which is providing a very specific benefit, how does it fit in with the rest of the environment within the bank? So there are a couple of factors here, and I think we've discussed this previously as well. The cost and how does it fit in with the current infrastructure is important. Third, I would say, is the skill set of people, which is a challenge, because historically what has happened is compliance and technology have been separate departments, not only within banks, but generally if you look at this ecosystem, we have people who are skilled in compliance, and then we have people who are skilled in technology, but there have been very few who are skilled in both. But now with the coming of RegTech and FinTech, there is a cross skill needed. So compliance need to understand technology and vice versa. And that's another challenge as well. So in this ecosystem where we had used to have just the banks whose main business was banking, now we have banks, we have regulators, we have startups, we have established vendor companies, and we also have technology companies who are not established players. So we have now a couple of players in this ecosystem, and everyone needs to find their own space. So that's another challenge as well. And let's not forget the customers. I mean, we are talking about this whole ecosystem is not just about bits and bytes and zeros and ones. It's about people, and the customers, I think, are the most important there. What do the customers want? Historically, we have seen customers, they are loyal to one, have been loyal to one financial institution, but now we see customers, they'll take services from multiple financial institutions, whichever offer the service they want, kind of want. So the loyalty factor has decreased now, and customers, what the customer wants is also increasingly important.
Okay, can you tell us about maybe some of an experience in terms of being on the end of trying to get into a financial institution, how long it takes? Sorry, we've got about 4 minutes left, so.
Sure, from a vendor point of view, it's almost slightly different. So we have to manage a lot of expectations, and it can be a rather lengthy and laborious process for our wonderful teams who implement these.
Six to 12 month period, right, in terms of actually being getting into a financial institution as a RegTech that's coming in.
It can entirely depend on the complexity of the solution that's being brought in. So I couldn't possibly begin. It could be anything from 6 to 24 months. Yeah. So it's managing those expectations and performing due diligence, and also making sure that, say from the RegTech point of view, that there's been regulatory traceability exercises carried out, and that there's an agreement on those interpretations, and make sure that they're happy with the way that the regulation or the solution is being implemented in the system. If you're not on the same page in that regard, I don't think you won't get off to a good start without that baseline.
Hi, just Michael here again. I'm just interested to hear from the Stock Exchange in Gibraltar. Tom. Okay. Question. What are the main hubs for innovation when it comes down to, I mean, what you are explaining, it sounds pretty cool. What are some of the other hubs, and why is that that you guys are doing this, what the other major stock exchanges are not doing?
So hubs as in jurisdictions where this is taking place?
Yeah, not innovation, really, in RegTech.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, we are located in Gibraltar because we have a jurisdiction that's very keen for development in that sphere. They were the first jurisdiction to write a piece of regulation covering distributed ledger technology. So we're in the process. We are licensed in principle. We're in the first wave of people who are undergoing final assessment. But you know, innovation is just it's a necessity. There is so much inefficiency in the market. I mean, we're obviously in the as has been mentioned a number of times, DLT is bandied about a little too aggressively, and a lot of people pander it as a panacea. But the genuine efficiencies and changes that it can bring about are immense. The financial markets have obviously evolved over hundreds of years, and so we have ludicrous inefficiencies in things like equity settlement. There are central clearing services for equities for 3 days of risk, including your day of execution, which is wholly unnecessary. It's just because of inherent inefficiencies. So in the blockchain side, obviously Switzerland has been huge. The canton of Zug has been a big center for it. But I think as we've had the whole wave of G20 regulatory reforms that with very lofty principles of introducing transparency, accountability, and stability to the markets, it did so in a very old-fashioned way. It was looking at the old way in which the markets worked. It was kind of magnifying a lot of the inefficiencies that already existed. And banks have spent billions. I mean, the madness that the G20 committed to a common set of standards globally, and they envisioned a common regulatory framework, and the US and Europe go and do the same thing in fundamentally different ways, and that's cost the industry billions. And so now, with that hemorrhaging of money over the last 10 years in adapting to that new environment, people are recognizing we need to be more efficient. And I think that's entirely what's driven it. I'm not sure if that wholly answers your question, but...
Okay, do we have any more?
Yeah.
Right there. Thank you.
To Tarek again, if I may.
Mm. Please.
Take that sip. You were mentioning the cleaning up always of the customer list as kind of a different way to look at anti-money laundering. So we're working with a few gambling institutions, and that was requested, and we did that for them. But then came upon a problem that it doesn't suit the Force AML. How do you see a situation where it does meet the Force AML? Because the Force AML says you have to do it per transaction on that specific transaction.
As in check the customer. So
the screening of the customer. So we are screening for ongoing, as you're saying, the delta. That's we're doing for them.
So that depends on whether it's a one-off transaction or an ongoing client relationship. So if it's a one-off transaction, then that's the trigger event that causes you to need to review it. You need to undertake that check. But if you have an ongoing client relationship, there are a number of ways in which a number of different triggers you can have in the life cycle of that client. If you are satisfying that every time there's a change to those lists and it was cross-referenced against your client list, you've already checked that there has been no change.
Except so that specific second of the transaction, that's what their lawyer required, what they wanted, they got...
So that was an external counsel opinion, not a regulatory opinion.
Yeah, okay. On a regulatory issue.
That's very interesting.
I'm just... Because they wanted exactly what you stated, and we did it, and that's why I kind of...
That's very interesting to hear. It's more an observation that is a crazy way to go about things.
Absolutely opposite. But, yeah. It's the right way, I think.
Okay, so I think we are out of time. I would like to thank everybody for joining us. I think we've done a very quick whistle stop tour of how we can improve AML and KYC, financial crime. We learned that I am not Watson. I cannot read 800 million pages per second. I don't know if anybody here can. It'd be amazing. We also learned about the different models and of the tech that's out there and some of the challenges that can be addressed. I just want to leave you guys with a statistic. I'm not sure if you guys know the statistic. Some of you may have heard it or not. But the current cost of financial crime compliance in the UK is $5 billion. The current cost of maintaining the prison system in the UK is $1 billion. The majority of the cost associated with financial crime compliance is down to human resourcing. More than 50% of the cost is related to actually individuals sitting and trawling through manual data and paper documents to review the information. So I am a big supporter of adopting new types of technology and exploring new kinds of technology, but it does have to be done in a way that is proportionate, that is responsible. Again, regulators are all about responsibility. The FATF highlighted they also supported innovation in managing your financial crime risks. But again, you have to make sure that you understand the tech, that you know what you're doing with the tech and what the pitfalls are, and assurance, as exciting as that term sounds, is one of the key kind of things that needs to be carried out on an ongoing basis with any supplier and vendors that you bring in.
Thank you for listening to our podcast on fighting financial crime and improving AML and KYC. For more content on RegTech from A-Team Group, visit our website at datamanagementreview.com. You can also sign up on the website for our next RegTech Summit, which will be in New York City on the 15th of November and is free of charge for financial institutions.